This, we're tracing the story of the Bible by looking at the five main covenants that you find throughout the Old and New Testament. So last week, we talked about the Noahic covenant. And these covenants, they show us how the Bible is the connected story of God. It kind of connects the whole story for us. So today, we're going to be talking about the Abrahamic covenant. So we're going to be looking at Genesis 10. And like I said last week, we're going to be working our way through a lot of scriptures because it's hard to tell the story of the Bible without reading the Bible. So we're going to be looking at a lot of scriptures. So if you have your Bible on your phone or if you have your Bible with us, flip to Genesis 10. That's where we're going to get started. So last week, just to kind of give you a quick recap to catch you up some, we talked about Noah. We finished it off with Noah and his sons stepping off the ark. And God, that was when God formed his covenant with them. And his covenant was that he would never again destroy the earth through a flood. Now, the definition of a covenant, I'm going to back up just a little bit because I skipped over that. And I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So a covenant is a chosen relationship or a partnership in which two parties make a binding promise to each other to work together for a common goal. So when God told Noah and his sons, this is my promise to you, this is our covenant, that I will never again destroy the earth, no matter how destitute the human population gets, I will never again destroy the earth through a flood. And he gave us the rainbow as a sign of the covenant. But as we all know, it didn't take very long. Like, it was within the same chapter of the book of Genesis. It doesn't take very long before humanity starts choosing their own selfish desires above God's purpose for their life. So division and animosity began to form within the family of Noah as a result. Now, a little side note, because I like side notes. In chapter 10 of Genesis, we see the layout of the descendants of the three sons of Noah. And I know that these lists are kind of boring, but they are so rich with historical information because you can see the hand of God working through the generations. So there's two sons. There's Ham and there's Shem. Ham and Shem. Now, I'm going to let you guys do the reading on your own. I'm not going to tell you the whole story because we'd be here forever. It's a really big book, right? But one son made a bad decision. He dishonored his father. And as a result, Noah cursed him. Now, that was Ham. Now, Ham had a son named Canaan. And Canaan became the father of a nation of people called the Canaanites. Does that ring a bell with anyone? The Canaanites were the number one enemies of the Israelites. So where did the Israelites come from? So there's the other brother, Shem. Now he honored his father and he was blessed. And he became the father through the line of descendants. Down in his line of descendants was this man named Abram. Abram, as we're going to learn today, became the father of a nation called the Israelites. We're all family. So these two sons and the division in their family had a ripple effect that lasted for thousands of generations. It's kind of like the Hatfields and McCoys. You have a feud that's going on here, a family feud. This is a thousand-year family, like thousands of years family feud. For the Hatfields and McCoys for you guys over here, you don't need to know. All right, so in chapter 11, we get an interesting little story, and I promise we're going to get to Abram soon. But first, there's this interesting little story about a place called the Tower of Babel. And in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9, I'm going to read that real quick. Now, the whole world had one language and a common speech. So this was 400-500 years after the flood. Some time had passed. Some generations had come and gone. So all of the people, all of the descendants of Noah and stuff, they'd all gathered in kind of one place and settled. And they all spoke the same language and had common speech. As people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They used bricks instead of stone for tar and mortar. Innovation. They then said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." Pause there for a second. Remember what Noah said to what God said to Noah? Got too many names going on here. God told Noah to scatter over the earth, populate the earth, and to make a name for him. So they said, "Let's do this so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and that tower of people that they were built, the tower that the people were building. And the Lord said, "As one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other." So the Lord scattered them from there all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. That is why it was called Babel, because there was a Lord, because the Lord confused their language of the whole world. From there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. Now, this sounds like just kind of a story. I'm sure most of you guys learned this as children. But what just happened here? Why did God scatter them? He caused confusion. So let's look at this. So last week, I compared Noah to Adam and what God told Noah to do. He told Adam to do the same thing, to spread throughout the earth, fill it, cultivate it, and live as God's image on earth. God placed them over creation. Just like he placed Adam over creation, he placed Noah over creation 2.0. Another parallel to the garden is seen in the Tower of Babel. It was basically the fall 2.0. This was a moment when the earth was starting again. God chose a remnant to save, and I'm not going to go into that any deeper today. Go back and listen to last week's message. But the Tower of Babel was God stepping into a situation, seeing that the corruptness was going to once again consume the earth. So he scattered them, and he confused their language. When they all spoke the same language, they decided that they did not need God, that they could become their own gods. Does that sound familiar? It's just like the fall, what happened in the Garden of Eden. They chose selfish ambition over humble submission. So God intervened. Just like he kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden, he scattered the people by confusing their language. And this marked the beginning of cultural diversity on earth. Let that sink in. Make a mental note of that, because we're going to circle back around to that. All right, kids. Talking to you for a second here. I have a question for you. And at the end of this service, Christy's going to ask you this question. So you got to pay attention so you can answer her question. There may or may not be a muffin in it for you. I just upped the stakes. So here's your question. Are you ready? What was God's promise to Abraham? Got it? You guys got it? Okay, we're going to move on now. All right, so we're getting into the story of Abram. All right. We're going to start in chapter 12. This is where it gets fun. There's not a whole lot of information that we have about Abram at this point. There's a few little tidbits about family and his descent, or how where he was descended from, his brothers. We know that he was married to a woman named Sarai, and we know that they do not have children. So we're going to get started in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. The Lord had said to Abram, "Go from your country and your people and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." That's a really big promise. And we're going to talk about why that's such a big promise. So what God is doing here is he's telling Abram that if he will leave the security of his father's household, his people, his country, that he will become a father to not just one person, but to an entire nation of people. Now, we can read that in our modern context, and we can miss a lot of what's happening here. So we're going to look at a little bit into the cultural and the time period, the context here of when this was written and what this really means. So first of all, Abram is part of a patriarchal, thank you, collectivist society. So what does that mean? That means that the family is operated, it's run, and it's determined by the father. The father unites, he organizes, and he kind of runs the family unit. Now, we're not talking about a family unit like one couple and their children. We're talking about generations of people under a father figure. Daughters, in this scenario, when they got married, they would join the family unit of their husbands. And sons, when they got married, they would stay within their family unit, their father's family unit, and their new wives would come with them, and they would be part of that family then. So for a son to leave a father's household, it would bring shame on the family. Not just the son, but on the family. So when you recognize that, you start looking at stories like parables like the prodigal son, and it kind of takes on a little bit different meaning of what it means for a son to leave a father's household. Families were bound by honor to one another, and they needed each other to survive. Now, it doesn't mean that they all lived in one big house. They lived as a unit in the same area. So, did you notice that last week we were talking about Noah? It said that Noah brought his sons and their wives on the ark. It didn't say anything about daughters. There's a good chance he had daughters. So let that sink in just a little bit. It's just the way the system was set up. So for Abram to leave his father's house was a big deal. Now, second, it was a really big deal for a couple to be childless. Now, not having kids, it brought shame onto the couple, because children secured the future. So at this time, we read that Abram was 75 years old. Now, I know that in the Old Testament, especially Genesis, you see people living like hundreds of years. So it doesn't seem very old, but it was still very old when you think about it was part of the culture to marry very young. So he was probably married before he was 20. And he's 75, and they still don't have kids. Do you think they had much hope? So when someone, when a voice tells him, "If you leave your father's home, I'll give you a family." That was kind of their only option, wasn't it? See, this doesn't really seem like that big of a deal to us in our cultural context. See, especially in like American society, we have this mindset that a man has to make himself, to become your own person. And it's rare for people to stay really close with their parents, especially after they're married. It's very common for people to move away, to move across the country, to move to a different country. It's very common because we're encouraged to chase opportunities. We're encouraged to chase pleasure above staying with family. And having children is considered to be a choice rather than a cultural expectation. Now, not being able to have children is just as devastating today as it was then, but for different reasons. It wasn't the source of ridicule and shame. So Abram was willing to leave the security of his father's household because God promised to make him a father. They were trusting that God was going to fulfill his promise. All right, so we're going to skip to chapter 15. Now, we don't know exactly how much time had passed here, but it had probably been at least 10 years. Abram's getting a little discouraged. So God speaks to him. He says in verse 1, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward." And Abram has a response. In verse 2, he says, "But Abram said, 'Sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one that will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus.' And Abram said, 'You have not given me children, so a servant in my household will be my heir.'" You kind of feel bad for him at this point, right? Like he had probably given up hope. He'd probably just decided, this is where I'm at. This is my, oh, that's ironic. This is my lot in life, because Lot was kind of his adopted heir. So this was kind of what he had decided. And then God promises him, "I'm going to make you a father." And he's like, "Awesome." And then it didn't happen right away. So we kind of feel bad for him. And, you know, I'm not a patient person. Are any of you guys patient? I'm sure a couple of you have more patience. I'm sure most of you have more patience than me. Really? You know, I have that mentality of if I'm not early, I'm late. And I know that that makes me kind of hard to live with sometimes. But then Matt rarely gets in a hurry. Like, he operates in his own speed. And he doesn't worry. He's never in a rush. Never. But it took me over 10 years to realize that just because he's not worried and stressing about things and time frames, it's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean that he doesn't care. We just operate on two different time frames. So I just picture, like, when I think about God first appearing to Abram, I picture him just, like, running home, and he's like, "Hey, honey." So I was outside, and I heard this voice, and he told me to pack up all of our stuff and leave and go somewhere. He kind of told me, like, which direction, but I don't really know where we're going. But he said we're going to have a baby, so let's go. I mean, first of all, if Matt did that to me, poof. I'm sure that she had some things to say about it, but it was a patriarchal, thank you, society, and so they did it. They packed up their possessions and all of the people that were part of their household, all of their servants, and they left because it was their only hope. But they probably expected that they would have a baby within the next year or two, right? But just like me and Matt, Abram and God, they're operating on different time frames. So we look at Genesis 15, 2 through 6. His trust is renewed. God renews his trust. He says, "Then the word of the Lord came to him, 'This man will not be your heir, but a son will be of your own flesh and blood will be your heir.' And he took him outside and said, 'Look at the sky and count the stars, if indeed you can count them.' Then he said to him, 'So shall your offspring be.'" There's a lot of stars in the sky, right? There's a lot of stars. But that's what God was promising him, that your descendants will outnumber the stars. So Abram is probably, like, renewed in his faith here, in his trust, and he's ready to go. But still, there was no child. It's tempting sometimes to think that God needs our help, right? It's easy to trust God when his timeline matches up with our expectations. But when you have to wait, it gets a little trickier. So Abram was now 85 years old. 10 years had passed since God had promised Abram a son. And in chapter 16, we see that Sarai tried to help God. The result of her impatience was Abram's first son, not by her, but by her servant Hagar. And as you can imagine, if you've ever seen Jerry Springer, I don't watch it. It didn't end up well. But I'm going to let you guys read that story for yourself. The important thing to note in this is what God told Hagar. Now, she is a servant in a household, and now she has the only heir to the household as her child. And she's cast out by the wife. But God sees her. God tells her, "You are now pregnant, and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael," which means God hears. "For the Lord has heard of your misery, and he will be a wild donkey of a man." That sounds fun. "His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." Another side note. The translation of hostility here does not mean that they are mad at each other. It doesn't mean that they're violent with each other. It literally means to the east of. It's interesting. Hebrew. It's weird. This is not a curse. God is not cursing Ishmael to a life of bitterness and war. He's just telling her what will become of the son that was born in the situation. God does not curse the result of our mistakes. Ishmael was not part of God's plan, but he hears the cry of Hagar. And if we look ahead into Genesis chapter 21, we read about how God was with the boy as he grew up. God never abandoned Ishmael because God was honoring his promise to Abram. Okay, so Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. So now he had a son. He had an heir. So everything's okay, right? In chapter 17, it's so good. Read chapter 17. Because there's so much that happens here. And we can't get into all of it today. And I wish I could read the whole chapter, but everyone would be asleep by the time I got done. But I want to point out some very important things here. So he's 86 when Ishmael's born. And now we skip ahead and Abram is 99 years old. Y'all, that's old even in Old Testament times. And the Lord appears to renew their covenant. So Ishmael is 13 years old now. That's important. Did you know that in this culture, 13 is when a boy became a man? I do not think that it was coincidental that God appeared to Abram when his first son was 13 years old. So Abram probably was expecting God to come and bless Ishmael, to tell him that this is the son that I will form my covenant with. He will be the father of nations. But God had other plans. Now, God renews his promise to Abram, but he also takes it a little step further this time. So he let Abram try to kind of do things his own way to fulfill. Like, can you imagine, like, if I made you a promise and you're like, "Awesome, I'm going to make that happen." And I'd be like, "What? You're cutting me out? Like, it's my promise to you. I've got a plan. I'm going to do something." And you're like, "No, I got it. Like, I'll fulfill my own promise that you made for me." That's kind of what Abram did. And God kind of let that play out until the son was now a man. God changes Abram's name to Abraham. So Abram means father is exalted. And up to this point, you know, Abram had, he had exalted his father. But Abraham means father of a multitude. He changes his identity. But there's a new stipulation. God tells him that all of his descendants will be blessed as long as they live under his covenant. And Abram's new nation of people, his descendants, they would form this nation that is meant to be set apart. And as a sign, all the males in their nation would be circumcised. It was a physical representation of being a people set apart from all other nations that lives under the covenant of God. But he also changes Sarai's name, Sarai, to Sarah, which means princess. And he says that she will be blessed and she will become a mother of nations. And among these descendants will be kings. This woman was not a mother. She is 89 years old. 89. She was past the point of being able to have children. But God is saying that she will become a mother of nations, including kings. She's a princess. An 89-year-old princess. Abram's 99. We're not dealing with a small promise. The promise has grown. So how did Abraham respond? Y'all, he laughed. Can you imagine, like, face down on the ground in front of the presence of God and you laugh? Like, it had to be like a nervous laugh. But still, like, he's like, yeah, right. Like, God, I already have a son. I mean, not by Sarah, but I have a son. Can we not use that son? The son I already have, can he not be the fulfillment of the promise? Because it seemed too impossible for him to take seriously. But the impossible is where God works best. Once again, Abraham's trying to help God out. He's just like, but I got this son. He's a good boy. He's a little bit of a donkey, but he's a good boy. We can use him. That's not my notes. And God agrees to bless Ishmael. Y'all, he blesses a mistake. God agrees to bless Ishmael and give him a good life. And if we read on, we will learn that he did have a good life. And he was not in hostility to his brothers, but he was apart from them. So Ishmael is blessed, but he said, no, there will be another son, and you will name him Isaac, because God has a sense of humor. And Isaac means he laughs. So God has a sense of humor. He's like, just because you laughed at me, you're going to call your son Isaac? And the covenant will be established with him. So Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. And the only explanation for this physically, scientifically, mentally, for this to work was divine intervention. So at this point, we have to ask, what role does the Abrahamic covenant play in the overall story of God's plan of universal redemption? See, Abraham would be the father of an entire nation of people that were set apart from all the other nations of people, because now we have nations of people, right? We read about the Tower of Babel. We have a multicultural, multi-ethnic world with people scattered all around, but God chose one man to become a father of a set-apart nation of people that were supposed to live as examples of his image on earth, showing them the way to live. And in doing so, they were meant to be a blessing to all other people. Through Abraham, God's plan of universal redemption grows larger. See, Noah was chosen to represent his image and cultivate his goodness, just like Adam was. But now God has chosen a nation of people that were created through divine intervention to live as his image and to cultivate his goodness on earth. So let's look at the story of God so far, where we are in it. So God creates the world, creates all of the things and all the people and all the stuff. And then he gives it all, he entrusts it all to a man and a woman named Adam and Eve. And it was through them that his goodness would be cultivated in the earth because they were reflections of his image. But they messed up. So then, thousands of years after creation, God chooses a family, a remnant of the world, and he places them in safety while the rest is destroyed. Not because he is a merciless God, but because they were destroying themselves and he is a merciful God. Go back and listen to that message if you don't believe me. And then we'll talk about it later if you still need to talk about it later. It's taken me a while to get to that point. I'm rabbit trailing. Jared, what's the word? I don't know. Yeah, that one. So he chooses a family. So we go from God creates a man in his image. We have a man, and then he creates woman. So we have two people living in his image. We have a couple here. This is my image on earth. Create, cultivate, sow my goodness throughout the world. And then he takes a family. He takes Noah and his sons and their wives and their children, and he tells them the same thing. You are created in my image. There is goodness in you. Cultivate that goodness throughout the world. And then they mess it up. But there's still goodness. So God chooses another man. And he says, okay, I'm not going to just choose this man with this already created family to cultivate my goodness. I'm going to cultivate my goodness in this family. So Abraham, I choose you. And you, through divine intervention, will become a father of a nation. And that nation will be a blessing. That nation will represent my image. That nation of people that are more, that has a higher number than the stars. That nation is intended to cultivate my goodness in the world, to share my image, and to be a blessing to all other people. See, what he's doing is he's taking, okay, everyone in the world and pointing them back to him through his people. So he started with a couple. He used a family. And now we have a nation. The universal plan of God's redemption is multiplying. It's growing. So this does not mean that all other nations were not blessed by God. For example, Ishmael. He became a father of a nation, and he lived under God's blessing. But the descendants of Abraham were meant to be set apart as an example and a blessing to all other people. And we're going to hear more about their story next week. But for today, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you trust God enough to wait on his promise? You know, it's easy to read all of this and to judge Abraham because of his reaction, or to condemn Sarah because of her impatience. But from the time that God promised Abraham a son until Isaac was born. You know how long that was? Anyone been doing math as I've been talking? 25 years. 25 years. That is a long time. That is longer than some of you people have been born. But because of their age, when he first made that promise, you know, it would have been a miracle. Because they were old when he promised them a son. But because God waited 25 years, wow, the story. You know, God does not waste time. When we're waiting, sometimes we feel like it's wasted time. But look at how God used that 25 years. He built Abraham's faith and trust to the point to where when he said, "Will you give your son back to me?" He said, "Yes." God used that 25 years to build Abraham's story. And God uses time. You know, you may have a promise. You may have something that you feel like God has told you that you're supposed to be or you're supposed to do. And you may be anxious in the waiting. You might be wondering, God, are you still working? Have you forgotten me? But as you're waiting, God is building. Because waiting is not wasted. You continue to build your faith. You begin to trust more and more. And as you do that, God starts showing you your plan piece by piece, and to the point to where when you look back, you're like, there's no way I was ready right here to do what God has for me to do right here. That time is not wasted. He's building your story. He's filling your story. So while the band does this last song, I want you guys to stand and worship, sit and think, ask someone to pray with you, pray with somebody. Use this time as a reflection period. Think about the words, ponder their meaning. Because you have to ask yourself, do you trust God to write your story while you are still waiting for His promise?